perspective, some have said that it eclipses any budget problems the city experienced during the Great Recession. The reason for the hole is twofold. First, the state legislature took away the business license tax and the revenue it provided to municipalities all over the state. Second, the county's property tax revaluation has resulted in less revenue coming in from that source. So City Manager Ron Carley came up with a plan to fill in that hole in what he believes is a sustainable manner. But as you might imagine, not everyone agrees, which is to be expected when a proposal involves taxes in an election year. But this hour, we've invited Ron Carley to explain his proposal to us, and he's brought along some additional help. Kim Eagle is the city's interim director of the Office of Strategy and Budget. Prior to that, Dr. Eagle spent 8 years in the city's budget and evaluation department as the evaluation manager. And Randy Harrington is here. He is the city's chief financial officer. Welcome to all three of you. Good morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice to have you here. Before we talk about the budget, before we talk about what happened at the council meeting last night, let's talk about Police Chief Rodney Monroe, who announced his resignation, surprisingly, yesterday out of the clear blue sky. Did you know this was coming, Ron?
I wasn't shocked. Chief Monroe and I have worked together very closely. He's been a very close advisor to me since I came to Charlotte. He's someone who's been very much a friend. He's running up on 7 years. He had a birthday over the weekend. I know he's been thinking about the next move in his life. I would have liked for him to stay a lot longer. He's certainly one of the best public administrators I've worked with in my entire career. But you know, when you spend your lifetime doing a really hard job that's highly visible with a lot of risk, you've got to make a decision at what point do you want to go. And some people stay too long, and some people make the decision they want to go out where they're on top. And I got to say, Chief Monroe is totally at the top of his game. He's respected universally by everyone, and I think it just sort of all came together for him. That it was the right time, and so I want to give him my full support.
And, you know, 7 years does not seem like a long time to be at the head of something. I mean, presidents stay eight, if they're lucky.
But there really are dog years. Police chief literally is never off work. Mm-hmm. You don't ever get to go home and have a glass of wine because you may be up at 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or 4 a.m., responding to a homicide or some other activity, even when you're away. I had to reach him over the weekend. You know, is taking a day off to play golf. You're never off work. It's exhausting work. I used to say the hardest job in local government was school superintendent. I don't think it is. I think in today's environment, the hardest job in local government is police chief. And we've been very fortunate in Charlotte to have Rodney for 7 years.
That's because with school superintendent, you get a vacation after the first 2 years. They let you go. Is he retiring? I ask because earlier reports, as they came out yesterday, and these could be wrong because early reports often are, said that his contract was up and that he had a job offer in California.
Yeah, most of the reports yesterday were wrong. He actually doesn't have a contract. He is an at-will employee and could have stayed as long as he wanted to stay. Again, I would have been happy for him to have and ask him if there was anything that I could have done to enable him to stay. Mm-hmm. But again, I think for what are really personal professional reasons, he decided the time is right. I do expect he will do some more work. He is retiring from Charlotte, as his letter said, but I hope he does some work. He has a lot to offer, and I think, you know, I've actually retired once myself. I've been through this. That's why I'm empathetic to it. Mm-hmm. And I went and did work with other local governments as a part of my association. And hope I brought some things there, but I ended up missing the day-to-day, and I think he's going to end up missing the day-to-day at some point as well, which is why I came to Charlotte. So in the short term, I think he'll want to get away from the 24/7 and just the burden that carries. But I expect he'll be active in the profession. I hope he will. He has a lot to offer.
The crime rate decreased during Rodney Monroe's tenure as police chief, and I think community relations improved during his tenure as police chief. And of all the comments that I read and heard yesterday about him from people like you and the mayor and others who are fairly high-ranking in the city of Charlotte, he has done an exemplary job. What will you be looking for in a replacement for Rodney Monroe? Because they seem like pretty big shoes to fill.
Well, there are big shoes to fill, but I will say one of the things I most admire about Chief Monroe is he's built a really deep bench. So the first thing I'm doing is consulting with each of his deputies. I started that yesterday. I'll finish talking with all of them today and get their perspectives and ideas and ask them what they're looking for and what advice they have. I think the most important thing that we're looking for is someone who can have the credibility of the rank and file in the police department and someone who can have the credibility in the community. It's not a pick one. You got to do both, and what he's done in the community has to be sustained.
So am I hearing you say that the next city police chief could be somebody who already works for us?
Well, it certainly could be, sure.
Okay.
And so I'm consulting with the senior staff there to get their perspective as my starting point.
Okay.
I have a lot of confidence in them. He has built a good team. He is one of the few managers I've worked with that has really focused hard on succession planning. He's got a great bench. I admire them tremendously. So I think we're going to be in good shape, but we're going to miss him because he's a unique personality and he has credibility in the community second to no police chief in America.
Okay, let's talk about why you're here, and that is money. We have this hole in the budget, and we have the hole in the budget, as I said, because we've lost the business license tax. The state legislature took that away from municipalities across the state, and we have been hurt a little bit by some inaccurate property evaluations that were reevaluated, and the revenue from that stream is a little less than anticipated. What is the individual impact of both of those revenue streams, the change in the loss of the business license tax and the reduction in money coming in from property taxes? What's the individual loss? Who can address that?
Mike, when you comment individual loss in terms of a homeowner,
well, I think to the city, how much did we lose from the loss of the
right.
business license tax? How much revenue are we going to be short from the property taxes?
Right, it's about $18.1 million on the business license tax, and then that would go away starting next fiscal year, and then with the property revaluation component, the loss of that is about $3.7 million for next year,
and. I mentioned that this is the worst. This is worse than anything that happened in the Great Recession. And what happened during the Great Recession was pretty grim. Is that an accurate statement? It's that bad?
The impact is greater than during the Great Recession. During the Great Recession, the city and city council reduced about over $15 million worth of expenditures in the city. And as you know from this year, we've had just about a $22 million budget gap. So it has been a bigger challenge.
So how did we handle the recession picture when we had to cut and do all things we had to do to survive the recession? What did we do then? How does it compare to what we have to do now? Had we started putting back things that we took away during the recession only to have to take them away again?
Right. No, those cuts in the recession were permanent. And since that time, the only adjustments have been some isolated and targeted strategic investments in police and fire and in solid waste as well. And at that time, those cuts, they were associated with expenditure cuts as well as some transfers of some expenditures with similar approaches that we're taking today.
Surely when the legislature took away the business license tax, they did this to cities all over the state, they knew that this would put cities and municipalities in a crunch. Did they not? Did you see this coming? Do they understand? Have you talked to them about what this means? Is it falling on deaf ears?
No. Well, last year, the legislature made this action last year, so we've obviously had some time, and we have been discussing it over the course of this past year and starting to put together a plan. But then also had the component of the reval, and there were some additional reductions as well that were associated with that. And so those combined added to that budget pressure that we faced this year.
Mike, the other thing that I think is important is after they did eliminate the business privilege license tax, which was a poorly structured tax that needed to have some changes. I don't dispute that at all. But there was a commitment that in this session of the General Assembly, they would examine alternative ways to replace it.
Yeah.
But that has not come to fruition. And as we've just discovered, they've got a $400 million surplus this year. The mayor has written a letter to the delegation suggesting that they take some of that $400 million surplus and redistribute to local governments to plug the hole that was created by the business privilege license tax.
Kim Eagle, did you want to chime in here?
I just wanted to say that the context that you mentioned relative to the Great Recession is important, because as we went in this year and tried to look at ways to reduce expenditures and reduce services to close that gap, we were living within that context. So we had already removed in certain areas of the budget. So that's the framework within which we operated.
It's because Randy just mentioned that those recessionary cuts were permanent. So how much more can be cut? How many more services can go away or be reduced before people start to complain that you're not doing your jobs?
That was a big focus for us as we went through and made the evaluation. We wanted to stay true to the council's priorities and principles, preserving public safety, police and fire, for example. So at the end of the day, we had $7.7 million that we reduced from the budget in services and expenses. So it was a difficult exercise, but one that we believe is sustainable.
We're going to talk about some of the proposals that you've put forward to fill the hole. But what if we didn't fill the hole? What would the impact be if we just said, okay, this is the new reality, this is how it is? What would happen?
Well, I think the practical answer to that is that you'd have to look at service reductions and or eliminations. And when you think about the general fund, over 80% of all expenditures in the general fund are associated with four areas: police, fire, transportation, and solid waste. Those are four key basic core services that citizens expect to be handled on a daily basis. And so with that kind of percentage in terms of where those expenditures are going and public and the community's desire to maintain those, that's a tough area to have to go into.
So what would it look like? I mean, we're talking, these are the basic things that people expect from government. Even conservatives who don't like government expect police. They expect fire. We've come to expect trash removal. And we certainly expect our roads to be built and maintained. So if we didn't fill the hole, if you didn't do anything that you proposed, if you just sat there and said, this is it, this is how it's going to be, what would we miss?
Well, that would be a major policy decision for the council to make. I mean, there are no simple choices there. And I think that's why in the public hearing that the council had on the budget a couple of weeks ago, we've not seen an outcry about the adjustments that have been proposed in the tax rate. They're very modest. And in the way that they're proposed for most homeowners, their actual net cost would go down. Because I don't think people want fewer police officers on the street. We actually need to add, based on current demand, two new fire companies that we're not able to fund with the loss of the taxes this year. If we had business privilege license tax, I'm almost certain we would have been able to fund one or two of those new fire companies.
Now, I mentioned it's just about a $22 million shortfall, but you've already been able to find $14 million. So the true shortfall is really only about $7 million, if I've done the math even remotely accurately here. Where did you find the $14 million?
Well, we found 7.7 from service and expenditure cuts.
Meaning what?
We went through every departmental budget and we evaluated all of the components of those budgets and made reductions.
Okay.
Where we could do so. And then there are some service reductions that are included as well. There are 100 positions in the budget that are vacant that are being eliminated as well. So we're asking our existing staff to do more and spread that workload and eliminating some positions.
Those are mostly over the administrative departments. We're getting dangerously close, I think, in cutting in finance and audit and human resources in order to preserve the on-the-street services that people expect.
We'll come back and talk about that. We have to take a break. Ron Carley is with us. He's the city manager for Charlotte. Randy Harrington, chief financial officer, and Dr. Kim Eagle, the interim director of strategy and budget. We'll talk about what this all looks like, what the proposals have been, what the reaction has been as well when we come back. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and CPCC's Summer Theater. Tickets for all shows, including Lionel Bart's Oliver, Cole Porter's Anything Goes, and Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr., now available. Tickets at tix.cpcc.edu or 704-330-6534. And NC Green Power, a nonprofit connecting North Carolina K-12 students and teachers to greener energy with solar PV grants. ncgreenpower.org. ORG. A new arts collaborative is presenting a multi-platform bilingual event featuring various Latin American art forms in one concert at the Mint Museum. It's an attempt to build a multicultural community in the Queen City, and we're going to hear about that in the first part of our program tomorrow. Then, three of the performers from Pippin, which opens tonight at the Belk for a week. It's a very athletic reimagining of the 1970s Stephen Schwartz show about Charlemagne's son's coming of age. We'll get a preview of what to expect from that tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 9 people are dead and more than 150 are in custody following a gunfight between rival motorcycle gangs and police in Waco, Texas. An update on the investigation, the history of outlaw biker culture, and connections to organized crime.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up next from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the $22 million shortfall in the city budget due to the absence of the business license tax and some property revaluation shenanigans that caused the revenue stream to decrease for the city of Charlotte, and what that means, and the proposals that City Manager Ron Carley and his staff have put forward that are being considered by City Council. Nothing's been decided yet. So you found $14 million in the budget by making further additional cuts. And I know you just said, Ron Carley, that you're becoming dangerously close to being, I guess, a shorthand way of saying it would be inefficient and able to do what you have to do. But some people would look at the $14 million and say, wow, you found $14 million in savings? Then we're spending too much.
Yeah, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. There are some that think we should cut more, and there are some that think you should cut an unlimited amount. But you're trying to make really prudent decisions, and it's not just the efficiency, but when you do it on the administrative side, it's also the oversight and accountability. And that's why audit and finance and human resources are so important. IT, we're also very thin on. But we're working really hard to keep the services on the streets, and we believe that if we do this budget, if the council at the end of the day adopts a sustainable budget, we will have done a basic reset, and we should be then able to grow with the economy going forward.
A reduction, as I understand, some of the things that might fall by the wayside if this doesn't come through, or if certain things are, maybe if your proposals aren't taken up by City Council. Service reductions, like a reduction in hours for the 311 telephone line, which is the information line.
I think that one's gone.
Okay. A reduction in code enforcement. Are you talking about building codes? What kinds of codes are you talking about?
No, that's the property codes, care of premises codes out in the neighborhoods. We have done a small incremental reduction there. I don't think that'll be revisited.
Okay. A reduction in traffic management and maintenance.
That's gone.
Mowing street rights of way.
That's gone.
A reduction in street resurfacing.
That is still in play on the councils. Now, say the council's not made, they've only made some preliminary decisions, so they can revisit everything, but they've narrowed the menu down to the items they're looking for. They're doing the heavy lifting now. Mm-hmm. This is really on their shoulders at this point. Repaving is something they've kept on the list to revisit.
Okay. I'm a little foggy about the timeline here of decision-making in the face of this shortfall, but I believe that you all came up with other solutions prior to what you suggested or have suggested recently to City Council. And then, Ron, I think you came up with a plan that you described as sustainable, and you just mentioned sustainability and that this plan would be, if adopted, would be sustainable going forward and be tagged to the economy going forward. What does that mean? And is this sustainable plan something that covers the $7 million that you're still in shortfall from, or the full $22 million?
It covers the full $22 million. The thing that we've been really faithful to, and I think the council is very sensitive about, is not using one-time money to just plug holes so that you start in the hole again next year. And services that are gone, like the loss of the 311 hours, we don't expect them to come back. It's a basic resetting of the level of service so that our base budget, less the $22 million, is the new base budget. And what we take away this year doesn't come back, and the money that we use to fill the holes is sustainable over time. We're not going into our general reserves at this point at all.
And explain to people how this is, how do you know this is sustainable over time?
Well, you do it by the choices that you make. Now, again, you can have unintended or unforeseen financial or revenue impacts right. that happen in the future, or expenditure impacts in the future. So it doesn't remove all uncertainty. The General Assembly could dramatically reallocate how sales tax are distributed. That's been discussed. I don't think they're going to do this session, but if they did, then, all bets are off and we have to start all over again.
Bob Ruscio, who is, I think, looking at a plan to redistribute, mm-hmm. his own plan to redistribute sales taxes across the state, was asked about this budget shortfall, and he said the problem is that the city's been spending too much money, didn't have that money to spend. You know what he meant by that?
Well, I think that was more of a policy and political statement. The city council had adopted a revenue plan that included the business privilege license tax, and the local elected officials had made conscious policy decisions about what services to provide and what services not to provide. One of the things that happens in North Carolina, I think, with some increasing frequency, is that the General Assembly then inserts itself into some of that local decision making by local city councils, and that is ultimately that's their prerogative. That's the form of government that we work under.
So part of your solution to this involves fees and taxes and a combination thereof, and it's an election year and people don't like to use the word taxes. They don't seem to mind the word fee. Aren't they the same thing? I mean, when you come right down to it, if you're paying a fee, isn't it a tax?
Well, the manager's recommendation does convert a solid waste fee for single family to the property tax rate. Mm-hmm. But the most important point about that is when you make that conversion and move it into the property tax base, about 80% of the homeowners in the city will see a reduction in their total bill. So when you get that bill at the September, October time frame, and you look at the bottom line, you'll have a savings. So I think that's significant when you think about fee versus tax and the total money out of pocket to support those city services.
Well, let's talk about the fees. Right now, we have the average homeowner every homeowner pays, what, $47 for fresh?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Is that per month, per year?
That's an annual fee.
It's an annual fee. So it's a drop in the bucket when you come right down to it. And what you're proposing is that homeowners be replaced with a property tax fee of 1.35 cents per $100 value on a home. And I understand that under this plan, 80% of single-family property owners would actually pay less than $47 per month. True?
Yeah, that's
yes, that's
true.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And the tax there is set to actually recover the fee that is lost, as well as identified cost in the increased cost in providing solid waste services. We rebid the recycling contract this past year, and it went up considerably. So it covers solid waste cost. If we didn't do it through the tax, then the other logical way is to increase the fee. And if you increase the fee, it would go up roughly $12, $13 to $60. $65 has also been suggested as a rate. That would cover all of the increased cost, but every homeowner would see an increase of $12 or more. And you have to get up to close to 90% before anybody sees a $12 increase in taxes.
Let me bring Michael Barnes into this conversation. Michael Barnes is the mayor pro tem, member of city council, spoke last night, I think, at the budget hearing or at the meeting they held last night at which you were in attendance. And he talks about fees, and he's not in favor of this plan. We'll put that out for everybody to know first. But here's what Michael Barnes had to say last night.
Nobody in this room wants to raise the solid waste fee to $186. But that to me feels like a shell game, which is what I don't want to be a part of, because it feels like you're taking it over here and putting it back over there, and I don't think it's received very well. But I do think that the elimination of the multifamily would be received and understood well.
So let's expand on that comment, because I think he's bringing some things into that we haven't even discussed yet. Because at the moment, apartment renters don't pay the trash fee, correct?
Incorrect.
okay.
apartment buildings and condominium buildings and some townhouse developments are classified as multifamily by Mecklenburg tax assessor, and they actually bill for our solid waste fees. So multifamily pays $24 per unit.
And who pays that? The owner of the building or
yes.
the actual? Okay.
Yes. Whoever the tax bill goes to. Mm-hmm. It's $24 a unit versus $47 for single family. It's actually more efficient to pick up in a high rise than okay. it is in a
right.
family.
Right.
And so one of the questions that's out there, should we even be servicing a multifamily? They get about a 50% subsidy relative to their fee. And should the city even be involved in that business, or should we just tell the multifamily units to go on the open market, contract for your own waste collection and whatever it will cost on the open market? Many large cities do that. That's not been the tradition in Charlotte, but many large cities do not involve themselves in multifamily collection at all.
You just said two things that sound contradictory to me. You said that they pay $24 a unit, which is half of what the homeowner would pay because it's easier to collect trash from a building because it's centralized. Then you called it a subsidy. Why is it a subsidy if it's easier to collect the trash?
Sure. Well, the subsidy comes, or the cost recovery, however you want to phrase it, on multifamily, it's about 50%. That is recovered by the fee, and 50% that comes from general taxes. That's off plus or minus about 6%, but in round figures. And for single family, it's about 25% fee and 75% general taxes. And so the recommendation that I have made is you just take it all general taxes mm-hmm. and you spread the cost over the whole tax base, including commercial, and that then enables the actual out-of-pocket cost for single family, condominium, and apartments to all literally decrease except for the very high-end values.
So under your proposal, what would happen? They would no longer pay the $24 fee, these mm-hmm. apartment owners. They would what? They would pay property taxes?
Right.
And would they pay it at the same rate as an individual homeowner?
Yeah, all properties pay at the same tax rate. You under state law, you can't have differential tax rates. And so everybody pays the same rate, but you pay it on whatever the value is of your property.
So because apartment buildings would be certainly more valuable than a single-family home, they would pay a considerably higher.
Actually, on net, they would actually pay less. And that's because the tax is spread out against the full commercial tax base and not just residential. 40% of our tax base is not residential. Right now, all of the solid waste fees are paid just by residential.
I read yesterday that 45 to 50%, this may not be an accurate figure, but 45 to 50% of Charlotte residents are said to be renters. Is that true?
What was the percent again?
45 to 50%. That seems very high to me.
That may be a little bit high, but for a growing urban city, that's not extraordinary.
Okay, which takes me to the next question. We have 10,000 apartment units coming online in the next couple of months, and we have 10,000 more on the drawing board. If it is true, as you said, and I take you at your word, that these apartment buildings would actually pay less under your plan, as we add more apartments to the mix, are we setting ourselves up for not having enough money to pay these trash collection fees?
Well, that is a legitimate concern, and that's why one of the options that the council has on the table is just not being involved in multifamily solid waste collection. There is a competitive market out there. Many cities let their multifamily units go on the private market and just contract for their service without city involvement, and that's one of the options that's being discussed right now.
So if these
But for every multifamily unit, that will increase their cost to about double of what they're paying today.
If they go private?
Yes.
So if these multifamily buildings end up paying less under your plan, if the plan goes through, and 80% of homeowners end up paying less, who's paying more?
Business. So right now, businesses are not picking up any of those fees. And so when you convert to the tax rate, that gets spread across all the businesses. And what we're trying to do is to make up some of that $18.1 million tax cut to businesses. This is part of a fairly complex plan to share the responsibility for filling the $22 million hole across all the different taxpayers. See, this budget, remember, it started out with an $18 million tax cut to businesses. by shifting some of the solid waste fee to the business community, which is 40% of our property tax base, they begin to share some of the responsibility from their $18 million tax cut.
But who collects their trash now? Who collects Wells Fargo and Bank of America and South Park's trash?
It's all private. They do it on the open market.
So they then would be paying a private trash service to collect their trash, and they would be paying to collect our trash.
Yeah, and understand, they're still doing that today. 75% of the cost of single-family waste collection is from general taxes. About 50% of multifamily solid waste collection is from general taxes.
So supporters have said that this is fair because they've taken the business tax off the shoulders of business, and so putting this on their shoulders is kind of a zero-sum game. It's a wash.
So now they end out ahead.
They end out ahead.
Oh, absolutely.
What have you heard from businesses around the city about this?
There was no testimony at our public hearing, and I haven't seen a single letter come in.
You know, there wasn't a lot of people at that. There weren't a lot of people at that first public meeting. Is that because people didn't understand the what was going to happen at that meeting, or are they simply okay with whatever happens, happens? I mean, what does that tell you?
There have been two significant concerns raised, one by the development community, where we've recommended reinstituting the council's 100% fee recovery plan. And so some people in the development community think we've gone too far too quickly. And then an adjustment in the stormwater fee, where we're trying to actually create more equity by charging everybody the same, but that will take the fee up for some high-end properties.
Not everyone on council obviously agrees with this. It looks to be almost split, 5-5 in some ways. But Ed Driggs...
Maybe 4-4-4.
Okay. Who are the four in the middle for? Ed Driggs, a Republican, says that he's called this a handout to people as we try to fix our budget. Is he talking about the distribution here of the tax burden? Is that the handout he's talking about?
He would have to explain that. I think what he's talked about are there are a few really high-end properties that will pay more than what it's reduced.
What they pay now.
Yeah.
There was a little exchange last night between Ed Driggs and Charlotte Mayor Dan Clodfelter, who doesn't get to vote on this unless there's a tie, but he's kind of the mayor here in this form of government is kind of the voice of morality, I suppose, and that is where he comes down. But let's hear that exchange about your proposal here from Ed Driggs and Dan Clodfelter.
There is just a lack of logic to this. It works, and it's convenient, and it makes the whole thing more palatable because the majority of people will benefit from it. But why are we giving money away right now when we're trying to solve a budget problem that the city has?
You know, I want to say this again. I think we're just missing the point here. This is not about solid waste.
Right.
It's not about solid waste. It's not about, I think Councilmember Autry agrees, this is not about this budget making the right final decision about how to charge for solid waste services. It's not. It's about fixing the hole created in the budget by the loss of business tax revenue from the repeal of the previous license tax and the commercial revaluations. Who were the primary beneficiaries of this revaluation? Not homeowners, but commercial properties. Lost a lot of business tax revenue. Bless his heart, the manager found a way to rebalance the tax system between residential properties and commercial properties to restore the imbalance that was created by the loss of that commercial tax revenue.
We'll come back and talk about that comment in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and James McElroy and Deal for over a half century providing legal services and counsel to individuals and businesses, jmdlaw.com. And Signature Healthcare, concierge medicine with offices in Uptown and South Park, providing patients with 24/7 physician access, personalized executive healthcare, and same-day appointments, 704-554-8787. Police have charged an estimated 170 people in connection with last Sunday's shootout in Waco, Texas. among rival motorcycle gangs that left 9 dead and 18 wounded. On the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes to 10 o'clock, they'll get an update on the investigation and the history of outlaw biker culture. That's 20 minutes from now. If you'd like to join our conversation, Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
So we're on the highway speeding southward out of Tehran.
From the deserts of Iran to the plains of North Dakota.
This is a classic Main Street. I'm standing on Dakota Avenue.
Every day, right. Morning Edition takes you to the news.
The water tower doesn't quite look like a peach again yet. City Tourism Director Leanne Stone.
Take a journey with us. Start tomorrow with Morning Edition from NPR News.
Catch Morning Edition weekdays from 5 until 9 here on 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the city budget shortfall and proposals to fix that hole in the budget with Ron Carley, the city manager, City of Charlotte, Dr. Kim Eagle, the interim director of strategy and budget for the city, and Randy Harrington, the chief financial officer as well. We'd like to know what you think about this year's problem, this year's city budget. We want to hear your thoughts on efforts to make up the $22 million hole. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We just heard kind of an exchange between Ed Driggs, a Republican city councilman, and Dan Klonfelter, our Democratic mayor, about this shortfall and your proposals to change it. It sounds like they're really struggling. People on council are struggling not only to get their heads around this, but to decide what the right thing to do is, not just because it's an election year, but because the lack of the business tax revenue coming in is a thing that they have to grapple with. It's a new paradigm for them. As you go through the city council, at least at the initial meeting, not necessarily last night, there was some Democratic opposition to this. Mayor Pro Tem Michael Barnes was going to be on this program today, but you decided, and I think you're probably right, that it would be uncomfortable to have to talk to somebody who may be the next mayor or your next boss to have to take him to bait with him. So we've brought him into the conversation on tape. But Barnes has asked you for plans that involve more budget cuts and less of a tax hike. Democrat Dan Klonfelter is concerned about the tax hike on business. Democrats Patsy Kinsey and Claire Fallon aren't happy with it. The mayor only votes to break a tie. But it looks like you have 5 against and 5 in favor. Vi Lyles looks like she is the swing vote here. And prior to her time on council, she worked on the city budget staff. Is she likely to have a better understanding of this and what actually goes on behind the scenes than some of the other council members because of that experience?
The first thing I'd like to say is in doing local budgets for almost 4 decades from your club, that's the first bless your heart I've ever gotten in working on the budget.
In the South, in the South, bless your heart is not always what it appears.
Yeah, I know, and I thought that last night when the mayor made the comment. But I think everybody can use a bless your heart right now. I do think it's inappropriate to appear with any of the mayoral candidates or council members to debate the budget in this kind of venue. The proper venue for that really is the discussion in the work session. And as I said earlier, they're doing the heavy lifting right now because it ultimately is their decision, and they've asked us last night to develop a series of different budget packages, not just individual changes, but some different approaches to the budget that they could look at as they go into their decision-making. What you heard from Councilman Driggs and the mayor and what you heard from Mayor Pro Tem earlier, I think is a robust, serious policy debate about what is the right way for the long term to make the adjustments necessary to provide a sustainable budget. I think it's a really high-quality debate, and I think the taxpayers can feel very good about the seriousness with which the council is approaching this topic and not taking my recommendations at face value, but really digging down under and looking at what are the other alternatives and what are the other options as they make as they put their stake in the ground and ultimately have to vote for it.
Well, you folks are the experts here, and I know you probably spent a lot of hours working on the proposal you brought before council that's now under discussion, and they have, as you said, asked you for some other alternatives, other options. What might they look at? What might they look like, or is it too early to tell at this point?
They actually, Mike, put a list on the table at our last conversation of 25 options for amendments to the manager's recommended budget. So what they did last night or yesterday afternoon was they went through that list of 25 and they took preliminary votes to see what should move forward to their straw votes process. So they took that list from 25 and narrowed it down to 10. So we'll go back and do additional research on the 10, the pay plan that's been recommended for employees, funding for our community partners, for example, are some of the things on that list of 10. And then they will take that for further conversation into their straw votes process. So those items could end up being amendments to the manager's recommended budget moving into the June timeframe when they look to adoption.
And your community partners would be people like organizations like what, the Arts and Science Council?
Yes,
who else?
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Who else?
Yes. We have several that are funded out of the general fund. Mm-hmm. We have relationships with crisis assistance ministries, for example, where we provide funding. So that's another partner.
It's unlikely that none of these suggestions, either the one on the table now or the one you're going to develop, it's unlikely that all of them would be rejected. Do you have a plan B if they don't like what you're about to come up with and they don't like what you've already come up with? Do you have a plan? It wouldn't be a plan B anymore, would it? Do you have a plan M?
Well, the goal is to give options to City Council. That's a really good point. Yeah. We want to go back and take the feedback from last night and do scenarios for them that they can use and almost provide a menu of choices so that they can work toward that decision that's best for them. So we feel like we're in a very good position to do that.
Yeah, okay. And ultimately, you know, this is Council's budget in the end. And so it's incumbent upon us and the manager to work with Council to help them get to a place where they're comfortable. And that's what this process is doing, is we're working through that and we're getting – you know, their input, and they're having their chance to make adjustments, and we'll keep on moving forward.
At one council meeting, one constituent, I think an audience member, suggested that the cost of health care be reevaluated instead of raising property taxes. And health care is a concern that I talked about with former county manager Harry Jones. He called it the elephant in the room, the thing looming large in the minds of everybody who runs municipal governments, is the cost of the benefit package for employees and retirees, and the health care was the biggest part of that package. With the advent of the Affordable Care Act, would it be wiser to pay employees or give employees a stipend to supplement coverage that they would buy on the open market as opposed to giving them health care provided by the city? And would that save you any money?
At this point, we don't think so because, you know, we're actually self-insured. I have to say Charlotte over the years has done, I think, a remarkable job of holding down employee health care costs. Back during the recession, I guess it was, Charlotte changed policies for retirees that took a lot of long-term cost off the table. And there are strong incentives to be part of wellness programs and to deal with chronic illnesses, so that our health care costs this year are only going up about 4%. And we're able, for our lowest cost wellness option, where people really do take care of themselves, to keep that cost flat for employees. So I would say this is an area, as I've, you know, over the last few years, as I've been looking at what Charlotte does well, I would say managing health care costs is probably one of the strongest things I have seen in the city of Charlotte.
So you're convinced we would not save money by changing the way we do it?
I do not think that we would at this point, no. Because we'd be covering profit and overhead and other things. Again, at this point, we're self-insured, so we cover ourselves with a small administrative fee to plan administrators. And that's true for almost all large organizations.
You at one point had suggested a pay-as-you-throw system on trash disposal, charging by the bag. Is that gone now?
I have never made that recommendation ever in my life.
How did we get that wrong?
You probably read it in the newspaper or read it on Twitter. The council has been seriously discussing ways to manage our waste stream, and one of the most common is a volume-based pricing pay-as-you-throw. And so we have been talking about it as a city. I have not ever made that actual recommendation, and part of it is because our system is not fee-based today. You mentioned $186 earlier as an amount that we don't want to raise the solid waste fee to.
That was Michael Barnes.
That's what it actually cost. And as you look to cities with strong pay-as-you-throw programs like Austin and Seattle, and I looked at their rates over the weekend, that's what they charge. You just charge varying amounts depending on how big your cart is, but roughly you're paying – well, our solid waste cost, I think, overall right now for our 96-gallon cart is about $15 a month all in. And that same cart in Austin or Seattle is around $50 a month.
Wow.
And you can pay less if you have a much smaller cart. Now, we still need to divert from our waste stream. We will save money not putting waste in the landfill. And so we still have work to do there, whatever route we go. The question is this philosophical one: how much of solid waste should be paid by general taxes and how much by fees? And that is getting more discussion during this budget than anything else.
Do we make money or save money on recycling, on our recycling efforts?
We don't make money on it because we have an interesting system where we don't actually control the waste stream. We do collection, but we do disposal with a county under an interlocal agreement. And so the county actually takes our recycling, and they either make money or don't with the materials. We have to pay for the collection of it, though.
But do we save money by having it? Because we didn't used to have a recycling rollout then. Now we do. So are we saving money as a result of that? Or if all of that material went into the trash receptacle, would we be paying more for collection?
I don't know the net on that right now because there are two objectives there. One is saving money, but the other one is environmental.
Right.
And sometimes recycling programs on net will cost you more, but you're not just getting the financial benefit. You're also getting the broader benefit environmentally.
Okay, because the reason I ask is because I thought if we save money, then we could expand it to apartment buildings, which I don't think we currently have a recycling program for, do we?
Not it's encouraged for the apartment complexes to do, but there's not a formal program with the city.
Okay. Lee on Facebook writes, the city budget is just a finite spending plan for a year, like you and I do for groceries and mortgage, but when in financial dire straits, we turn to our portfolios and make withdrawals. What about all the investments the city holds? Why can't the city exhaust its invested income before turning to the people or making cuts? This money is traded for income daily on exchanges. I'll turn to the money people here.
Yes. So, yes, the city does have a reserve or a savings account, so to speak, that we use it for emergency purposes or unforeseen opportunities that are not expected during the budget process. But it's easy in concept but difficult in practice to actually do that. A couple of the things. One is that savings is also a key quality to the city's AAA credit rating, which is something that's very important. That allows us to borrow money at the lowest possible cost out there in the market, and you never quite know what an emergency might be. You know, for example, when Hurricane Hugo came through, in today's dollars, that was about a $50 or $60 million impact on the city in terms of what it had to do to respond to that event. And so you never know when that next event like that might occur. And so it's important to have a reserve level for those unanticipated needs.
Mm-hmm. And they're one-time funds. Once you spend down your 401k. You don't have anything.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And our driving principle in putting together this budget, and I think the council has demonstrated this in all their discussions, is to make it sustainable. Mm-hmm. Let's get the budget reset based on what's happened to us externally so that our budget can grow with the economy itself.
Kim.
That was the point I was going to make in terms of resetting a budget that's sustainable in the future. And if we draw on reserves, that's a one-time fix, and we can't rely on that.
There's another unknown lurking in the wings, and that is the plan. The state legislature was considering a plan to redistribute sales taxes around the state that would take money from urban areas and give it more so to rural areas. It's been put on hold for the moment, but State Senator Bob Russo from Matthews is said to be ready to unveil his own sales tax redistribution plan. Are you planning for this? Is this something you can plan for? And if a redistribution plan does go through that removes additional revenues from urban areas and gives it to rural areas, what do we do?
There are lots of scenarios out there right now, and it is impossible to plan for all of them. Senator Rucho has talked about broadening the base, and he's also talked about holding cities harmless initially and then doing the redistribution in the out years. So until a plan is really out there and has legs, you're throwing darts at the wall.
At a recent council meeting, you had people standing up and saying the city doesn't give them enough for their tax dollars. Other people claim the city should cut back. Others say the city doesn't have an income problem. It has a spending problem. It's all over the board here. And Gary on Facebook says, I want the guest to speak to the proposed reductions in the Arts and Science Council budget. As a board member of one of the smallest arts organizations in Charlotte, the proposed reduction in budget would mean almost a 10% reduction in the overall funds our organization receives. It's a significant amount of money for an arts organization that provides arts programs to over 12,000 underserved children in mostly minority schools throughout the city and county. Charlotte is not going to have a lot of art if this approach is taken. This is just one example of one organization or one group who wants some money from the city. So how do you respond to that?
Right. So the manager's recommended budget includes a flat funding level for Arts and Science Council. So what that means is we've recommended for next year the same funding level as they have this year. What City Council has done in their deliberations and the adds deletes process is put that on the table as one option they could evaluate as they go through the process. So on that long list that I mentioned earlier of 25 ideas, they put a 5% reduction and then a 10% reduction. But last night they took the 10% reduction off the table, so the 5% reduction is still there for them to consider.
And yet we have a budget hole we have to fill, and you have all these people wanting money. It's got to make it very difficult, not for you, but for council members to decide which approach to take. Former county manager Harry Jones used to say on this program all the time that taxes equal services, and that the absence of taxes means an absence of services. Do you think people understand that?
At some intellectual level, they probably do. But who doesn't want something for nothing?
What do you think your budget will look like after they vote on this on June the 8th? Any idea at all?
I think it's going to be a really solid, sustainable budget that ensures the continuity of the services and policies that the council considers most important.
City Manager Ron Carley, Dr. Kim Eagle, Interim Director of Strategy and Budget, and Randy Harrington, the Chief Financial Officer. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. Our producers are Aaron Kiever and Tim Ross. Our associate producer is Alexia Girodi, and the engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about archives, upcoming shows,